Well, what kind of the path forward for July 1st, 2025? My apologies for not being online for the past several weeks, or it's been one thing after another. I was hard down on the internet last week for almost 4 days, and I'm finally back up and operational. So here we are. And I'm still working on the gun video. I'm still doing some edits to it. I'll probably have that up Wednesday or Thursday. I may just, you know, post the whole video with all the unedited stuff. But essentially what I'm talking through is how to pick a firearm, which firearms you want to have around the house for, you know, home defense and stuff to carry. The thing I want to talk about today is community. With the passage of the big bright turd, the big bankruptcy bill, look, we're headed towards times where community and resiliency are going to be probably the most important things. And now's the time to start building community if you haven't already done so. And I got a lot of questions after the AI videos, because people are seeing more of the language learning models showing up across social media. We're only going to see more of that, as well as online theft and online identity theft. So I could spend hours talking about it. But the reality is, I want to focus on what should we be doing right now versus talking about all the bloat that's in the bill. There's enough people talking about that, right? But nobody's talking about building a resilient community. And what we really need to do right now is start building communities and thinking about how do we want the U.S. to look on the other side of this? Because what we've seen over the past, I'm going to say 16 years, has been grift, theft, corruption. And it's so rampant now, you can't even look at anything in the public space, especially in the political space, and think that it's legitimate. It's just not. So some things that I wanted to talk through. The first one is, what does a resilient community look like? I can tell you what it looks like. It looks like you have a faith-based community that has, in general, the same mindset, right? Think of it as picking the cream of the crop for your community. Because on the other side of this, some things that the founding fathers didn't account for. They didn't account for large cities dominating the political landscape across the country. In fact, the Constitution was never designed, and they never really thought through the process of how should our communities be designed. So case in point, I think counties should be limited to no more than 1 million people in the entire county. We should have cities that are no bigger than 500,000. Ideally, 250,000 is the ideal city. And then we have industrial areas outside of those cities that can be reached by two or three cities with a commute, as well as everybody in the community should have enough land so they can do a garden, they can raise livestock, et cetera, right? We should be building our own food sources and cultivating our own food sources so there's a surplus within the community. So that's just one aspect of it. Limiting the city size, limiting the county size, and then limiting the amount of government that governs those counties. I mean, look at just regulations, right? We need to drastically reduce the number of regulations that we have across the board. City ordinance, state ordinance, city laws, state laws, county laws. We're drowning in it right now. And if you look at what's going on in Washington State, they're basically deconstructing the Constitution of Washington. They've already deconstructed the Constitution of California. So we need to get back to the original principles of the Constitution of each state and state-driven laws that trump the federal government. Right now, you're seeing the Trump administration and all the tech bros trying to consolidate power at the federal level. And they're trying to move this transhumanist agenda as well as the social scoring system forward. We have to work and operate completely outside of that at the community level if we ever want to regain any of our sovereignty and our freedom. And that said, the key thing is faith-based communities, faith-based and real education about civics, about our history, and we'll have to get to the real history too, because so much of our history has been obfuscated and written over. but we need to get back to where we're teaching kids simple things like how to manage money. Where does money come from? We need to get back to a barter system. So each community has a barter system. We need to get back to a medical system where we have medical systems where hospitals aren't tipped over, where we don't rely on an emergency room. We should have medical, you know, like first aid stations around each community. We should have, if we have like confinement or prison systems, those prison systems need to reform people. And if they don't, then we need to execute people. That's simply how the deal has to go. Establishing a strong and robust rule of law is probably one of the most important things when we get to the other side of this. Because I think what we're going to go through is going to be brutal in a lot of different ways. That said, the faith-based community, everything builds off of that. You establish values, you establish a core value system in our kids. We teach kids all the same thing, so they see and hear the same things. We teach them a work ethic. We teach them what's important. But most importantly, we teach kids how to make a human connection. We teach kids how to operate within a community, which means we put the phones down, we put the tech down, and we use the technology to enhance our lives, but not to control our lives. And that's going to be a vast challenge for just about every community, is what balance of technology do we have in our societies, in our small communities, in order to push our children in the right direction. And that's going to be, we're basically going to have to reset there. Because right now, if you look at just how kids are indoctrinated into the system, they're indoctrinated in very, very subtle ways. First thing is, they're exposed to technology early on in their life. And they're taught that to distract themselves with technology versus distract themselves with legitimate play and going out and you know, being with other kids. And the more that we do that, the more we disconnect to help them connect, the more that they're going to integrate in society in a better way. At the same time, we have to start from a very early age to teach kids manners, respect, how to communicate, how to operate and just be functional in society, right? So we're talking about a society where there's zero tolerance for any kind of disrespect of themselves or others, right? And we're dealing with a society right now that's laced with all kinds of traumas, right? You have child abuse, you have physical, mental, and emotional abuse. You have kids that are growing up in single parent families. We have to basically go back to centering our entire community on families and family values. And that's going to be extremely hard because there's not a lot of us left that have really grown up in that environment. I mean, the boomers are not a good example of that. Most of the boomers, I call it the generation of me. That's mine. This is mine. This is what I want to do. This is my stuff, right? We need to devalue the stuff and value, you know, personal property, possessions. They're not important. What's important is family, friends, and the time we spend here. We have to instill in our children a sense of self, a sense of purpose, and a sense of, you know, serving other people and, you know, service above self. And that's going to be a tall order because that value system has been systematically and overtly just bred out of them with technology because of the distractions. And I was, you know, today I went to a dealership to get some parts for one of my trucks. And I was astonished at how many people are just wandering around on their phones. They're not even paying attention to their surroundings. They have no situational awareness. They have no concept of, you know, what it really means to be respectful of other people and other people's space or privacy. All of that's been bred out, and we have to reinstill that. We have to start from the ground up and work from the ground up to instill a mindset of protecting our children and, you know, teaching children versus out of sight, out of mind. children should be seen and not heard. Remember those little adages? I remember them as a kid. Children should be seen and not heard. But that's great. But we're in a time period where our society is so corrupt and so morally bankrupt that the children are learning that it's okay to cheat. It's okay to get over. It's okay to lie. It's okay to steal. That value system needs to go away. And look, it's been pervasive in our society since the, you know, early stages of forming a nation, right? There's always going to be, anytime you have people that are affluent, you're going to have somebody that has more money than sense, has more money and no values. And we have to reinstill the concept of enough, the concept of you don't need bigger, better. You don't need the bigger, better deal. You don't need the bigger, better house. We need to get back to modesty and consumption based on what our needs are and creature comforts that make sense and don't distract us from real life. That's the basis of a faith-based system is that, and I'm not saying that we have a faith-based system that is predominantly controlling the government. That's not what I'm talking about. That was, in fact, if you go back to the Dark Ages, when the Catholic Church and the monarchies got together and changed all the rules and laws, you will see a very stark picture of how that oppression, you trade one oppression for another. And we're gonna struggle as a society to deal with the transhumanist agenda, to deal with the ability to regrow organs, the ability to prolong our lives for, you know, 400 or 500 years. There's a price for everything. And we have to teach kids what it looks like for the opportunity cost to do things, right? Because anytime you change the human physiology, you're toying with potential adverse effects and second and third order effects that you hadn't even anticipated when you set out to change the human physiology. And that's what we're on the cusp of seeing right now. And get away from the malfeasance of the vaccines and the healthcare system. We'll have to restructure, rebuild the healthcare system. In fact, I'm just going to say that every institution in our society needs to be rebuilt from the ground up, which means we're going to have people that sacrifice and give up what they're doing to go and rebuild an institution and set conditions for future generations that you may never see the fruits of. I don't know a lot of people that are willing to make those kind of sacrifices right now, but I will guarantee you that if we go through what I think we're about to go through, we will definitively see people that will give up what they're doing just so they can set conditions for their children. I'm one of them, right? I don't need a huge house. I don't need a lot of toys. I mean, I have a lot of shit now, but I don't need all that stuff to be happy. The things that I get the most happiness out of, in fact, people that know me will tell you that I get most of my energy and I recharge when I'm around my kids and I'm hanging out with my kids. And there's no technology involved in that. You know, my kids will sit down and play a board game or do a puzzle, and we'll sit there for hours and just talk and hang out. And we may do stuff outside. We may go, you know, on a hike. But the point is that we're doing things together that doesn't involve technology. And I feel good about the fact that I've instilled some very, very good work ethics in my kids, because they watched me work my ass off both in the military and in my civilian career to get to where I'm at. And they've seen the fruits of the labor, and they know that there's sacrifice that goes along with that. And they've also realized that I've sacrificed for them to get to this place so they could be afforded some of the luxuries that I didn't have as a kid. And that's the kind of work ethic that we need to instill in all kids. We need to get people off of public assistance. We need to cut the drug problem. We need to cut the porn problem. We need to cut out and deal with all the mental issues. We have a tall task in front of us. In addition to that, we need to build communities that are mutually supportive, which means you're mutually supporting your neighbors while respecting their privacy and respecting their private property. And that's, again, it's always a balance act. And our society's gone so far to the other side now, where we're, you know, basically dictating how other parents should raise their kids. That's not a sustainable model. It never was. It's never designed to be a sustainable model. It was always designed to be a system that rewards people for getting other people's, you know, and pushing their value system on somebody else. We just need to create a value system that everybody can adopt, and those that can't don't stay. That's how this has to be. And it's, you know, it's the other thing that we have to do in addition to that is we need to change all of our laws so our laws are in plain English that everybody can understand, and we base it on common sense. And I'll give you, for instance, for right now, if somebody comes in and breaks into your home and you shoot that person, depending on which state you're in, you may or may not have the right to stand your ground and protect your family and your personal property. The rules need to be written to where if you break into someone's house, that you automatically have the intent to do harm to that person. So it doesn't matter if you have non-hostile or hostile intent, the intent is the same all the way across now. And if they say you break into somebody's house and you end up killing an innocent person, guess what? You're put to death. You get a trial. The physical evidence speaks for it. No circumstantial evidence, no conjecture, no lawyers doing theatrics in the courtroom. It's all strictly based on evidence. The court system looks at the evidence and then they sentence you. And you either do hard labor or you die. You either hang or you get shot. There's got to be no in between. And it has to be that way for generations, because we're breeding out the concept that it's okay to take from other people and to harm other people. And that's going to take generations to restore that value system. Just like selfless service, it's going to take generations to restore that mindset of selfless service. And I would also say that everybody in the community needs to be trained in either go and serve in the military, which I think at some point there should be compulsory service, as well as compulsory training for everyone. And everybody in the community has firearms training, medical training, and military training, and they have defensive training, right? Not necessarily offensive training. You don't need that, but you definitely need defensive training. And then it becomes mutually supportive when other people are attacked from the outside influences coming into your community. Then everybody's trained to the same level, and you know what your actions are, and everybody should have a purpose in the community. Just like everybody should have a purpose in whatever government or governing body that community decides to build. And I will tell you that if we spend no money on social services and we use that money for aid stations, for law enforcement, for community training, we could pay for all of it. And we wouldn't have to tax people to death. And we could charge a flat tax for everybody in the community and pool those funds and pay for all the community amenities that any community would need. It's really not that hard. And we could build manufacturing. We could build production. We could enhance farms. There's so many different things that we could do if we weren't spending money on social programs. And now if you look at the federal budget for social programs, 2/3 of the federal budget is non-discretionary spending, which is Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security, right? If we weren't paying for that and we were building real retirement plans with real annuities and real investments and real oversight, people could retire and they wouldn't have to worry about living on a fixed income. And the society around it would be mutually supportive. Just like if we're all producing food, guess what? There's a surplus, and we could use that surplus to help people that are either entering the job market or people that are leaving the job market and moving to a fixed income. There's lots of different things that a community can do to supplement not only their well-being, but their operating costs and their operating efficiencies. And there's lots of things that retirees can do, as well as, you know, teenagers can do that would help the community out. And on top of that, you know, we need to instill that, you know, if kids aren't in school, they're working. And there's plenty of time to be kids. There's plenty of time to do the dances and to do all that normal adolescent, let's say, behavior, but at the same time, we're building those kids to be productive members of society, and that has to be a community activity. It can't just be kids go to school and we rely on teachers to give them all the knowledge that they need. And the school years need to be longer. They need to be less, you know, less holidays, more, in, you know, more grindstone into the school. And maybe we shorten the number of years they're in school, but kids should be expected to go all the way through college and get a degree and get a specialty, even a trade, right? And we need to focus on rebuilding the trades and get away from AI and all this conjecture around AI is going to replace everybody. It may. They may take this in a nefarious direction, but the way we counter that is we have resilient communities and we stay away from the lure of all of the different pieces of tech that can basically dominate and take over our society. And the Balance Act is going to be building that resilient community, building that stockpile of goodwill and people that are dedicated to helping others in their community. It's going to take time to do that, but eventually the importance and the draw of all the high speed tech and amenities, that won't be as alluring to the younger generations. I mean, I'll use social media as a perfect example of this. If you look at Instagram or Snapchat or TikTok, kids spend hours, even YouTube, hours swiping through videos, watching, you know, 15 second, two minute videos. And kids from the ages of, you know, 13, I'm going to say even 10, all the way up to 35 now, that were raised in that environment in the last 20 years with the allure of social media, they've been just inundated with it, and they spend all their spare time is in their phone. Their whole life is about screen time, taking pictures of themselves. In fact, most of these social media influencers, you just go look at their profiles. They all look the same. They'll take the same pictures. You know, the gym rats are all wearing their bikinis, taking pictures of themselves, and you know, various, you know, different poses. They all do the same thing. They all say the same thing. They all look the same. And, you know, while it's great to be healthy, it's great to be, you know, have a, you know, a washboard stomach, there's a price for that too, right? What are you sacrificing? Yeah, you may make a lot of money from social media to go live the lifestyle, but what are you really getting from that, right? And with notoriety comes a lot of other things. But the damage has already been done to those generations because their whole life revolves around their online persona. And it revolves around what they want people to think their life is all about. They don't really spend time living their real life and trying to cope with their real life and manage their real life. It's all an online persona, and it's all managing that persona, which is massively unhealthy for a lot of different reasons. So we have to get away from that. And one of the ways to do that is to keep kids busy away from tech. And the more you do that, the less dependent they are in tech, the less that they get involved in all the neology and the idioms and all of the different, you know, unspoken nuances and the language that comes along with that, that's all unhealthy. And it also will preclude kids from being inundated with the sexuality, with the satanic messaging and all the unhealthy themes and messages that are pushed through social media and movies, et cetera. And that's the other thing too, where we've been bred to be a sedentary population, meaning that our population is really set up to sit in front of a TV, eat processed food, and not really take care of ourselves. And if we go back to a style of living where we're all doing things during the day that's physical, that's both physical, mental, and is taxing in some way, shape, or form, you'll see people that are more healthy. You'll see people that are less dependent on sitting in front of a TV. And it's not as alluring. I can tell you that I don't watch TV. Every once in a while, I'll watch a movie or a series that, you know, I know is not laced with messages. But at the end of the day, I don't miss it. In fact, I was watching Captain America last night, and look, it's laced with messages too, right? All the Marvel and all of the now the Star Wars and all of the a lot of the other, especially Star Trek. Star Trek's just laced with stupidity now. But the first Captain America, the thing I liked about the comic book, the thing I liked about the original storyline is that Captain America represents everything Americans should be, because his whole life is about doing the right thing for other people and for himself, and holding himself to a standard that's higher than everybody else, and keeping his moral compass as straight as possible and pointing it to true north, which is, you know, serving other people, selfless service, doing the right thing, having integrity, being an honest, productive person. And, you know, several times throughout the movie, Chris Evans, his character says, you know, why am I different? I shouldn't expect somebody else to go do a job when I should be able to go do it too. And that should be our mindset as a society. That's who we were, and that's who we started out to be. And if you look at a lot of the original founding fathers, a lot of those guys lost their livelihoods. Some of them lost their lives, and they knew it when they signed on, but they were trying to build something better for future generations. And this experiment's lasted 250 years. And that, you know, it'll be 250 years next year. And here we are in the cusp of that, and we're having to go through a massive reset. And I think part of this reset needs to be that we don't allow politicians to change the laws, and we get back to a constitution. Everybody talks about the 1871 constitution, et cetera, et cetera. We need to get back to the place where the constitution is the law of the land, and we have our moral compass is built off of the Christian value system that started this country. And we teach kids what it means to be a productive member of society, what it means to have resiliency, what it means to have, you know, personal accountability and personal discipline and personal fortitude, is lack of a better word. We've gotten so far away from that, that, you know, kids don't have a moral compass. They don't have parents that are telling them, nope, you got to do the right thing. Even if nobody's looking, you need to do the right thing. And this is what the right thing is. And we've got so far away from that now that kids they're just disoriented. And it's unfortunate, because I see kids now, every once in a while, I see a kid that's just dialed in. It's because their parents are dialed in. Their parents are checked in. Their parents aren't, you know, checked into technology. They're checked into their job. They're checked into their family. And they're checked into their faith. And you can tell who those families are. You know, and every once in a while, you'll meet the control freaks that, you know, they're so far to the right or so far to the left that they just have to be in control of it. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the families that have, you know, healthy kids because they have a healthy relationship with their kids. They enforce and they maintain healthy boundaries and value systems, and they teach their kids what it means to be a productive member of society and how to be respectful to other people. You can see them, you can see those kids right away. And everybody I know that's like that is a devout Christian, every single one of them. And I know a couple of Muslim families that are that way too, but it's the exception rather than the rule with other religions. And you can make the same claim about Mormon families, but you know, there's issues with the Mormon side of the house too. I've seen a lot of people that say they're practicing Mormons, but they're anything but that. So with every religion, there's hypocritical, but it's all faith-based, right? So you take the good apples and the bad apples from each religion, and you can build a community off of that. The key to it is to make sure that you don't let people into leadership positions that are power hungry, that are narcissistic, that are egomaniacs. Those people cannot be allowed to serve. And there should be a psychological test for everybody that's about to enter government and everybody that's about to enter into foreign affairs, because let's just say the grift is never going to go away outside of the U.S. It's always, there's always, but we have to build people resilient enough to where they can go serve in those environments and keep that service short enough to where they're not tainted and they're not lured to the money or to the power or to the notoriety. And that's going to be a tall order. And that's part of, that has to be part of the system of government governance as we go forward, because we can't allow people back into power and go back to the old system, which doesn't work. And we've seen that it hasn't worked for 80 years. Ever since the end of World War II, this country has been on a slow decline, and it's been on purpose. And we need to hold psychopaths like Bill Gates and some of those. Those people need to be dealt with swiftly and decisively, and they cannot be allowed to stay in society. And there should be psychological tests for kids all the way through school, to where if we see even a hint of somebody turning into a psychopath, and it has to be draconian. I hate to say it, but if we're going to rebuild this country, we have to be draconian about maintaining law and order. We have to be draconian about influencing and enforcing a value system. We have to be draconian about managing the government when we get to the other side of this. And we will get to the other side of it. It's just, what does it look like to get there? And how awful is it going to be to go through it? That's what we should be focused on right now. We shouldn't be focused on anything else, because of the fact that there's so many distractions and there's so much noise in the system that it's not even worth paying attention to. In fact, I've completely checked out of the news cycle for the last 2 weeks, just because there's nothing. It's all bots and AI. I look at Twitter, and Twitter's just a toxic hole of stupid. The LLM systems are so pervasive now that it's hard to tell who's a real individual and who's not. In fact, there's so many AI accounts now that post like 500 or 600 posts a day. I mean, on a good day, if I was in Twitter all day long posting, maybe 40 posts or 50 posts. For somebody who's in Twitter all the time, that's part of their living, like Huango, he does maybe 70 to 100, but 500 posts a day, no way. It's just no way. It's AI or it's a bot. Or it's a group of people that are posting things into an account trying to influence you. The point is to disconnect from all of that and focus on the things that matter. That's what we need to be doing. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm not focused on, you know, how do I feel about the big bankruptcy bill? I don't care, because there's nothing I can do to influence that. There's nothing I can do to change it. I could call every politician in the world, but they don't care about us. They've made it a point to tell us they don't care about us. So why worry about it? I'm worried about, how do I build resiliency into my kids that are at a distance? How do I build resiliency into my community here? And how do I expand my line of sight, my sphere of influence here? How do I meet more people? How do I connect with more people here and, you know, start to build a system outside of the everyday system? Like, we don't barter anymore. We don't trade. There's still people that do it, but we've been taught from the time we were very young that you go buy stuff. And if you can't buy it, then you do without it. And we need to get to the place where we make stuff, where we can fix things, where we know how to mend clothes. Most people don't even, you get a rip in your clothes and a shirt, you throw it away, right? That's our society. And every other society on the planet, they'll mend clothing until it's unserviceable. And then they'll go buy new clothing. Go look in your closet, look at how many clothes you have. I can tell you, I've probably got 50 polo shirts in my closet. And how many do you actually need? 4 or 5? 2 or 3? I mean, back in the 30s and 40s, everybody had a Sunday suit that they wore to church, and they had clothes they wore to work, and then they had clothes they wore around the house. But it wasn't a lot. And if you look back in the 20s and 30s when they were making houses, those closets were very small. And two people were sharing those small closets. And look at the closets now. Some of the closets I've been in just here in Scottsdale are bigger than my house. And how much stuff do you need, right? That's a question we don't ask as a society. It's, how much stuff do you need? How much stuff is enough? How much stuff is going to make you happy? How much stuff is going to carry you through? I know that, you know, push came to shove, I could carry all this stuff out of here even if I wanted to. And that's the point of it, is that we're supposed to be looking at our life saying, okay, how much is enough? How much do I actually use? How much do I actually need? How much is just sitting there. Like, I've got suits that I haven't worn in years, and they're still hanging in my closet. Every once in a while, a few years, I'll go to a wedding or some kind of a special occasion, I'll wear a suit. But for the most part, I probably got 30 suits, or, 30 dress shirts in there, and four or five suits that I don't wear. And that's not the uniforms, that's not all the gear, that's not all the tactical clothing and all the other stuff, right? And my point is that we don't stop as a society and ask, how much stuff do I actually need? How much stuff do I actually use? How much stuff can I physically, physically take with me? And I can tell you that when you deploy to the desert, you're swimming in gear. I mean, I had like four duffel bags. I couldn't carry all that stuff. And here I am going out in the field. And once you get all the stuff and you get your rack, you throw everything that you don't use into a bag, and it sits either under your bed or it sits in, sits in your hooch. And then you go out and you use the stuff that you actually need and use. And you replenish that stuff. The rest of the other stuff, you just take it back and turn it in. And we need to get away from that model. We need to get to the model where we consume what we need and what we can use, and that we don't hoard and go overboard. And I think that's part of the value system that we have to instill in kids, right? Is how much is enough, and what's the measure of happiness? Because we don't talk about what makes people happy. We don't talk about the measure of happiness. You're barraged every day by media saying you need more stuff. You need this car to be happy. You need this house to be happy. You need all this other stuff to be happy, to compete with the next door neighbors. Do you really need to compete with the next door neighbors? Does it really matter? And that's where most people don't ask the question. And it's a bigger part of the community problem, because imagine everybody living in modest homes, 2 and 3 bedroom homes. Say 3 bedroom homes was the standard, right? Then somebody has a big family, they go get a 5 bedroom home. But you're not building these palatial mansions in the new communities. In fact, the community shuns it, because that display of wealth should be, and I think is detrimental to our society for a lot of reasons. And one of those reasons is that everybody that has tremendous wealth, their moral compass is completely skewed. There's a very, very small number of the affluent that haven't been affected in some way, shape, or form by all that money. And it stands that most people that have that kind of money, look at Bill Gates. He's got billions and billions of dollars. He throws money into all these nonprofits and talks about how he's giving it up. But he's really not. He's not giving up control of the money. He's just moving the money into buckets so he doesn't have to pay taxes on it. And he's got the huge house in Lake Washington. He's got bunkers and houses all over the planet. And people are driving down the street and they see these massive, massive houses. It just creates envy. It creates jealousy. It creates a lot of negativity. And if you look at it from that perspective and you realize that not everybody, we don't need to build barracks so everybody looks the same, but we need to get back to a standard of living that's realistic, that's not based on this endless and, endless resources, because that's not real either. We're going to have to get to a place where we manage the resources we have and we create the renewable resources we need, and we live in balance with the rest of the planet. I mean, just drive down the freeway and look at how much garbage is on the freeway now. It's terrible. We need to be better stewards of our environment. And part of being better stewards is shedding the system of greed and the mindset of greed and moving toward a mindset of enough and a mindset of balance and really living our life from that balance. Because I can tell you that we can build vacation resorts that people can afford to go to, and they can go vacation and they can have that luxury on vacation. But then they can go back to their real lives and live their real lives. I mean, we're very good at that. As a society, we're extremely good at it. And that piece is what's been missing for the last 50 years, because we've seen politicians go to office and enrich themselves, and they, you know, build these palatial houses and they live the rest of their life, and everybody else wants a piece of that. And it creates the jealousy, it creates the envy, it creates the resentment, etc. And if we got away from that and we built communities that were smaller with some hegemony, it doesn't matter. And I'm not talking about racial hegemony. I'm just talking about hegemony in the architecture. And I think you would see a vast difference in our society and how healthy our society was and wasn't, because we wouldn't be running down the bigger, better deal. We would be running down what could we do next to enhance society, to make society better. And that's, you know, and that's going to require smart people to sit down and say, what does better look like? What does better mean? What does better entail for communities and for our society? And what's the impact of that better, right? We don't think about those conversations right now. In fact, we don't think of governance. We don't think of oversight. We don't think of ethics. And just look at AI. AI is completely the Wild West, and that's going to come back in spades to bite us at some point. And I hate to say it, but we're on the cusp of that too. So, you know, I was asked the other day if this disaster cycle that Ben Davidson's talking about, maybe that's God's way of resetting the planet when the population gets too corrupt, or a system, a government, a system of, you know, or a culture gets to the point where it just has to be reset. Maybe that's the reset button. Maybe that's God's way of wiping the planet. Because if you look back in history, there's been several disaster cycles, and we're now hearing about civilizations that were, you know, homogenous societies that were destroyed, you know, 5,000-6,000 years ago. Who's to say that there hasn't been multiple disaster cycles with multiple advanced civilizations that were reset just because they got too corrupt, which is where we are now? I mean, you can make the argument, but the point is, I think we need to start thinking about how do we start building resilient communities right now that will weather the storm together and will be able to manage and survive whatever is coming. I think that's where our head needs to be, and that's where my head's at. So think about it, because there's a host of changes coming, and they're not all of them are good, and not all of them are going to be beneficial for humanity. But I think now is the time for us as a society to start thinking about what resiliency looks like, and we need to start striving to move towards it and rebuilding the structure and the foundation of our society outside of what's going on in the political and the geopolitical landscapes. At least that's where we should be focused. I'll be back on Thursday. I'll be doing another show. And I'm not sure what I'm going to do that show on yet. I may do that on learning language models. We'll see. Get the gun video posted. And if there's topics that you want me to cover, throw it into Substack or throw it into Telegram, and I'll do my best to get some experts on to talk through it. Till then, God bless. One team, one fight.